big show for you here today. Justin Boone joins me to go through week two of the preseason and lessons we learned. We started off with some really unfortunate injury updates. Malik Nabers dealing with an injury for the New York Giants. The Matthew Stafford saga continues. And Devon Achan, is he at risk as a first-round pick? Now that we are learning he's got a soft tissue lower body injury. Not a lot of clarity there, but maybe we got some clarity in some certain backfields. The Jets, the Seahawks run game looked absolutely incredible. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And join me to do just that is Justin Boone. Boone, what's going on, buddy?
Well, I had a big moment last night. I had my home league with my high school buddies. And it was the first time where right before the draft started, my video popped up on everyone's screen, so they had to look at my face, which was just a great feeling watching everyone in the league have to do that. Some of them closed it very quickly, which I don't blame them at all, but it was certainly a nice moment for me.
I mean, shout out to you. That is pretty incredible. Got to be a good feeling. And, you know, if the draft videos are popping, you know, right before your whole process comes off, that means that football season is right around the corner, and it absolutely feels that way. We're going to get into it. We got a big show here today. Boone and I are going to break down our overall kind of big picture takeaways from week two of the preseason. We're going to get into all that. But first, let's hit some injury headlines, because Boone, that is another sign that football is right here. We really got to start to take these injuries seriously. Let's get started with New York Giants. Adam Schefter today said that the Giants wide receiver Malik Nabers has not practiced in 11 days after dealing with what multiple sources told ESPN was a minor back problem. One source characterized it as, quote, normal camp tightness. I think this is slightly notable because Nabers has quietly, and I think this has gone a little under-discussed, we certainly have not talked about it enough here on this show, has quietly been dealing with a lot of things. He is dealing with a lingering toe injury dating back to his days at LSU. He also kind of quietly admits that this might eventually require surgery. He also suffered a shoulder injury early in training camp. I have a potential galaxy brain take on this that I will get into in just a second, but it sort of relates to what I'm about to say here. And that, Boone, I feel like, look, if this was Bijan Robinson, you know, hey, three injuries over the course of training camp and he's missed 11 days, I just kind of feel like we'd be talking about it a little bit more. So are you freaked out about this Malik Nabers situation, the injuries, or is he not a guy that you're moving at this point?
I don't know about this one. I mean, obviously it isn't ideal, but doesn't it seem like Nabers also has like a little bit of Allen Iverson in him, where it might be a situation where he just doesn't feel like he needs to practice? Because we saw this last year, like you said, a lot of injuries. The only one he actually missed time with was the concussion, and that's because he had no choice. Other than that, he played through the injuries. He produced through the injuries. It didn't really seem to be a problem. And I brought this up before, and we've talked about some of the guys that are either star players or veteran players, and they have these injuries during the summer that keep them out and avoid some of those tough practices. And then sure enough, when the season comes back around, they show up, they ball out. I think that's probably going to be the case with Nabers. I mean, it's definitely something we have to monitor. No question. We got to monitor. He's missed 11 days of practice. That is scary. But I'm not going to move him down that far at this point. I'm still more than willing to take him at the end of the first round. We know the kind of talent he is. We know the volume that he'll get. I don't like that these injuries are mounting. But this one, I'm not that concerned about yet.
I'm not that concerned about it yet either. The only thing that kind of gives me pause is, one, I'm really high on Nabers this year. I think he is a guy that I would take at the end of the first round. He's not currently like a consensus first round pick, although maybe this would make me break some ties against him at this point. But my galaxy brain theory on this, Boone, is that because the Giants basically, I joked about this last year, they weren't really running an NFL offense. They were running like a Malik Nabers usage scam. You know, 41% of the air yards, and he didn't even play a full season. 30% of the team targets, and he didn't even play a full season. As you mentioned, he missed a little bit of time with that concussion last year. And, you know, he's used on these layup targets, like to get the ball in his hands quickly. I am really intrigued about his, I actually think that it might be nice for Neighbors if his overall target total came down and he was actually targeted on some deeper go and post routes, which we have seen Russell Wilson, to his credit, fling that football down the field in preseason week two. We saw him really push it. Sometimes, well, sometimes not so well. My galaxy brain theory is that if Neighbors continues to get the sort of like high usage that we saw as a rookie, a guy that's not like the biggest player in the world either. He's not a small receiver, but he's not necessarily the thickest, most powerfully built player. I actually wonder if he could be like a running back where you do worry about the amount of times he is truly touching the football. But like I said, you could tell me that's stupid because I think it is kind of a galaxy brain take.
No, I definitely think there's something to that, but this is one where we're going to have to be closer to week one before I start to actually get worried about this. I just think he's going to end up playing. He's still young. I know the injuries are mounting, but I don't know. To me, this just seems like something where he's missing practice now, but he's still got time. And when we get closer to the season, it's not going to be a problem. Long-term career-wise, we're going to have to keep an eye on it, yes. But at the moment, I don't think we need to be too concerned.
Yeah, something to monitor, but maybe not freak out about just yet. Like, let's hope that that's the last time I utter that galaxy brain Malik Neighbors running back, you know, touches thing that we never talk about it again. Something we have talked about all throughout August, and we've got to talk about it one more time, is Matthew Stafford's back. Talking about more backs here as we enter closer to week one. Gary Klein of the LA Times, multiple people said this over the weekend, asked to confirm whether quarterback Matthew Stafford worked out as scheduled. A Rams official declined to comment and said Sean McVay would address the situation on Monday. I saw this tweet, this language of like Sean McVay would address the situation on Monday. I saw this Saturday night, maybe a little bit late. Maybe it had a, you know, big healthy dinner. Maybe it was, you know, not completely 100% sober at the time. But I remember seeing this, Boone, and just being like, yikes. I mean, just would address the situation on Monday. People listening to the podcast back, not the folks watching live, people listening to the podcast back on Monday will actually be in Monday. So maybe you've already heard whatever McVay is going to do to address the situation. But I'm really trying to not freak out about the Matthew Stafford thing, Boone. But they continue to say things like this, the immortal chamber, that maybe I'd be stupid to not freak out about it. So this new variable introduced into the Matthew Stafford back saga that has been our lives in August and late July here, Boone, just give me the state of the state. How are we feeling about this?
I mean, we're not doing panic meter yet, but like panic meter, we're getting into it now. We're getting into the red a little bit here, right? Like this has to be something that we're worried about. And it's exactly what you said. It's the way they're talking about it. We've referred to this when the Texans talk about Joe Mixon's injury and they're so weird and cagey about it. And now the Rams are starting to be like that with Stafford, where it seems like they almost don't want anyone to ask about it. And maybe that's because they don't know. Like some of these back injuries,
it
could be day to day. It could be him trying to figure out and them sort of testing it in different ways. And they'll just have to see how he responds. But yeah, when they give these set time, okay, he's going to throw this day and then he doesn't. And now they're talking about it like this. It's not really for Stafford that we're worried fantasy-wise, because Stafford would need to put up a huge season, right? A quarterback like him at his age, he would need, you know, a huge yardage total, a huge touchdown total to be considered as a, you know, top 12 starter in regular fantasy leagues. So he's more of like a low-end QB2 option for fantasy. The real concern is what do you do with the other guys in that offense? Puka Nacua, at this point, I'm willing to move him down a little bit, and I'm going to do a rankings update Monday. Amon-Ra St. Brown, much safer pick at this point, I think. Brian Thomas Jr., I would take him. And now we're even getting into maybe like Ashton Jeanty over him. I think I would. Drake London, that volume Drake London's going to get, I think he could have a Puka Nacua type season, and he doesn't have this weird quarterback situation hanging over him. So that's where I'm starting to get with Puka Nacua, that's pushing him into the second round. It's still not over. It's still Stafford could show up before the season and everything's fine and this offense keeps rolling. But I am willing to bump Puka down a little bit. The guy I'm even more worried about is Davante Adams, because Davante Adams shows up with a new team. You want him to get that time with his new quarterback. You want them to be prepping for the season, and he's not getting that time. And in fact, he's getting his old pal Jimmy Garoppolo out there, and the reports in camp are saying that Jimmy Garoppolo is doing the same thing and throwing him hospital balls, and Davante Adams is getting lit up a little bit there. We know that's not going to make him happy. And that makes me concerned that, you know, if Stafford's out there, who's going to take the hit? Is it going to be Puka Nacua? A little bit. But is it going to be that second receiver, Davante Adams? For sure. And then Kyren Williams too, right? Kyren Williams, where's the concern there? This is a guy that really lives off the scoring, the touchdown scoring in this offense, the success of that offense. If you don't have Stafford out there and you have Jimmy Garoppolo, or there's been talk, do they go after a Kirk Cousins if Stafford's not going to be available? And again, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves on this, but an older version of Kirk Cousins or this version of Jimmy Garoppolo, it's really bad news for this offense. I think Puka Nacua could get by, but man, I would be worried about Kyren Williams dropping down a few spots and Davante Adams definitely dropping down.
I just am uncomfortable with how much this is all sort of reminding me of the 2022 season. And that's been sort of my fear with this Matthew Stafford thing, is that we've seen this, almost this exact story happened before with this team, where Stafford is managing an injury all summer. That was the elbow. It wasn't the back then. He was managing an elbow injury coming off the Super Bowl run. There were questions along the offensive line. If this offensive line is healthy and it's out there, it's not foolproof, right? They have issues at center. Left tackle Eric Jackson does have the blood clot things, but you know, we'll see what's going on there. Again, it's not a flawless offensive line, but it doesn't look as bad on paper as that unit did back in 2022, to be fair. But also, they signed a veteran X receiver. That year was Allen Robinson, who was having a great training camp, right? There was a bunch of reports, oh, Allen Robinson having a great training camp. My guy, Allen Robinson, geez, God almighty. And it was like, oh, but you kind of forget that John Wolford was the guy throwing him the football because Stafford wasn't throwing in camp. You come out week one, those guys might, like, were reading off music off a totally different sheet from one another. And I think Adams, even at a more advanced age than Robinson was at that point, obviously Robinson had hit the age cliff and had fallen off of it. Adams hasn't shown those same signs, but you just never know with an older receiver. And also, again, he's not had a lot of time to build up a lot of timing and chemistry with Matthew Stafford at this point. And it, again, in that first chapter of that 2022 Rams season, Cooper Kupp was able to survive because he got all those like designed layup targets, which I think Puka will as well. But yeah, the similarities are a little troubling that we've seen this, like, and to your point, like, oh yeah, Matthew Stafford comes back, we're probably fine. But it's less to me about whether Matthew Stafford comes back week one, and it's more about, is Matthew Stafford participating come week 13, 14, 15, 16, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, for sure. And back injuries are that kind of weird injury that can pop up at any moment. And during the season, it could look real good for 4 weeks and he takes the wrong hit. And at his age too, right? Like, he is going to take shots. There's no doubt about that. Doesn't matter how good the offensive line is, he is going to have to hold up against some big hits at some point. And that gets very, very scary. It's like a weird game of Russian roulette that you're going to have to play fantasy-wise throughout the season if you have any of these Rams players.
Yeah, I definitely like the way you frame that, as some of those safer picks at the 1-2 turn, I would definitely take them over Puka. And definitely, you know, Davante Adams is a guy that I'm not really drafting wide receivers in that range. He's not making it any more interesting to draft wide receivers in that like rounds 3 to 4 range, because he's someone that definitely could exceed that ADP. But I don't know. Again, hopefully by August 25th, we feel a lot better. But I keep saying that, and it keeps getting closer to August 25th, and I'm not feeling any better. Something else that doesn't make me feel great is NFL Network's Cameron Wolf reports that Dolphins running back Devon Achane has a soft tissue lower body injury that will keep him out between, quote, days and weeks. Love that. Big difference between days and big difference between weeks, but they are two periods of time. Mike McDaniel told reporters in Detroit this. McDaniel also indicated he's not concerned about Achane's availability week one versus the Colts. This makes me concerned to read. I don't love to read soft tissue lower body injury about a guy that is going, if not at the end of the first round, very early in the second round. So Boone, he's another guy that I think I'm going to bump some of those wide receivers you just talked about behind ahead of Achane in my overall rankings. And I've been kind of waffling between Ashton Jeanty and Achane as my, you know, fifth or so running back right now. This definitely makes me just push to the guy that's a little bit healthier. Do you think that's an overreaction?
I don't. I would even go maybe even a little bit further at this point with like same Drake London, like I just talked about, Chase Brown, who I'm very high on. Like, what's that different between Chase Brown and Achane at this point? And we've talked before about all the red flags in Miami this year. It's not just this injury, which is the latest one now, and doesn't sound like he's going to miss a ton of time. Even if he did maybe show up for week one and wasn't ready, doesn't sound like it's something that's going to last too far into the season. But the Tyreek Hill situation and his kind of weirdness all off season long, and the offensive line's not great, and we could just see this thing kind of falling apart pretty quickly this year. I think it could go off the rails. I've already been worried about that. When you throw this injury into the mix, that makes me want to push Achan down into like the mid second round, maybe even a little bit later. I'm going to have to go over the rankings tonight. Like I said, the rankings update will be live on Monday. But it's to the point where I'm kind of shying away from almost every Dolphin. And I will say it helps that I did get a lot of Achan and Waddle earlier in the offseason. So I have the shares. I don't need to invest more at this point. I think I'm good. I don't want any more. I'm hoping those shares can still come through for me. But I'm very, very worried about this one.
If Achan does miss any time, Jalen Wright would be the first man up, but he has not had a very good preseason. He's kind of getting some push from Ollie Gordon. So Ollie Gordon is definitely a name to know and continue to track over the next couple weeks, as Achan might miss some practice time. Unfortunately, one other very highly drafted player in fantasy also dealing with a soft tissue injury. I love this quote. Head coach Kevin O'Connell, when asked if Justin Jefferson, who has been dealing with a hamstring injury, will practice this week, quote, "He's definitely going to hopefully start doing more and more. I can't say what that's going to look like from a practice standpoint yet." That sounds like something stupid I would say if I was trying to get out of like answering a question. Is he's definitely going to hopefully do something. It definitely means he's going to do it. Hopefully means he might do it. So Boone, are you definitely moving Justin Jefferson down your rankings, or are you hoping that you see him practice sometime the next couple of days?
I might be foolish on this one. I'm still not that concerned. I think from the get-go, they've just acted like they're being cautious about this one. And listen, maybe I'm being too chill. Maybe this time of year, I'm a little tired and I'm just not getting animated about this like I should. But, you know, Jefferson is the franchise guy. They know that. They also know that Jordan Addison's going to miss three games with a suspension. They also know that Jalen Naylor is actually banged up right now, too, their third guy. Yeah. Would they not be going out and signing people? Like, if they were that concerned about Jefferson, I feel like they'd be making some moves here to get guys in that could potentially start for them in week one. They haven't done anything like that. So I don't think they're that worried about it. I think fantasy managers, you just have to make a decision risk-wise what you want to do. And it's close enough in that first round that if you want to go with Jahmyr Gibbs, if you want to go with CeeDee Lamb over him, that's fine. Like, none of those guys are bad picks. They're all going to be great this year. So I don't have any issues with that whatsoever. But I think Jefferson will be out there week one, and I think he's going to be okay. I think they're just slow playing this. But I will say, I said similar things last year about Christian McCaffrey's situation. And then in week one, we got the big reveal that, hey, that injury was a little worse than we thought. Then his whole season got derailed. So I realized there's a chance that I could get the rug pulled out from under me here. But based on reading the tea leaves and, like I said, them not going out and getting anybody else, I think Jefferson's going to be okay.
That's a good way of reading into it. And I hope that, again, we just get clean reports throughout the rest of we get something. He definitely practices this week and continues to stack some good moments together before week one. Last thing before we throw to break here, and, you know, we don't have to follow up on this. I just want to make people aware. Quentin Johnson and Jalen McMillan left their games in the preseason with injuries. Keandre Lambert-Smith, Trey Harris are important to track in Los Angeles, but hopefully Quentin Johnson, really scary hit. Hopefully he is okay after that. Jalen McMillan, it's just more and more opportunity for Emeka Egbuka, but that was another like scary head neck injury there. So keep an eye on those guys as they're like late round flyers, deeper best ball picks. But if they miss any time at the beginning of the season, there are some young players that can certainly benefit, some rookies there specifically that could benefit from early playing time. All right, we are going to toss to our first break. When we come back, we have some rookie running backs to talk about, including a guy in New England who was the talk of fantasy Twitter over the weekend. We're going to get into that right after this quick break. All right, we are back. Boone, if you remember a few months ago, we did a contrarian corner episode saying, like, what if this rookie running back class, doesn't really hit their ceiling? I got to say, I feel like a lot of that did not age well here in week two of the preseason when these guys – starting right at the top with Ashton Jeanty, really put it on the field here this weekend.
Well, I think some people got a little bit concerned because there was like a tweet that went out that he was in the medical tent early and people started panicking. And then guess what? He ends up out on the field and he's just crushing it. He was fine. He was slicing through the defense. He was getting to the second level. He was absolutely just trucking guys too. Like, he looked like the player that everybody thought that he could be. that it seems like he is going to be here. And you have that Chip Kelly offense. You have the fast pace that we expect. This is looking pretty good. I think this is an exciting scenario for a rookie running back of this talent level. I think he's going to be great for fantasy. I also want to say, too, there's a lot of people out there that I think not just overreacting to the Genty medical tent stuff, but overreacting to Brock Bauer's usage this weekend. Like, it's the second week of the preseason. Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of crazy, right? People are going, oh my God, Michael Mayer's playing more than him. This is a huge concern. I don't think this is a huge concern at all. Why on earth would they play the tight end who was third in the league amongst all players in catches last year? Why would they play him any less? Why would they limit his usage other than the fact that this is the second preseason game, right? So maybe they're protecting him a little bit. Maybe they're showcasing, because Mayer was a guy that was talked about in trade rumors and stuff in the offseason. Maybe they're showcasing him. Who knows? But regardless, I'm not walking away from this week thinking that Brock Bowers needs to be moved in any way. This guy's going to be a fantastic fantasy asset this season. And if you're overreacting to his usage in the second preseason game, I think you're getting probably a little bit too cute with this.
No, I think that's, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask you about it. Like, I was kind of surprised to see, you know, some of the reaction to it. I do understand, obviously, you see Brock Bowers, who is a second-round pick in fantasy football right now, is a guy who had 150 targets last year. And when they go to, just to put it in concrete terms here, when they went to like 11 personnel, one tight end on the field, Michael Mayer was usually the guy on the field. Brock Bowers would come in when they do 12 personnel, two tight ends, stuff like that. If that happens in week one, like Brock Bowers isn't running 80% of the routes, I mean, I'll just like, I'll be stunned. I don't know what to say. I will just be absolutely blown away. I think there's a near 0% chance that happens. Like, I know we're doing a preseason week two reaction takeaway show here, Boone, but we've kind of jumped the shark with preseason, bro. Like, this stuff is not like, oh, we're really like, they're showing us exactly. And as a matter of fact, like, we all used to say that about preseason. They're not showing us everything here. You know, it's vanilla, remember, like, yeah. RG3's, it's vanilla. Yeah, it's vanilla schemes, this, that, and the other. Certainly you can pick up some clues about, oh, yeah, I think Liam Cohen's bringing some cool stuff to Jacksonville. You know, this is interesting here and there. You can try to parse out some clues, but you're not getting, like, unfiltered. This is exactly what we're going to do in week one. So I'm certainly not worried about Bowers at all. And just seeing Genty, like, have a really nice performance here. Again, I'm not probably adjusting my ranks based on that, but it's just good to see from a conceptual standpoint.
Yeah, and I will say, like, these games, they look like real NFL games, but they're essentially like, you know, glorified scrimmages between these teams, right? And you have to remember,
right,
this is an extension of practice. They're trying to figure out, you know, who on this team is going to be able to contribute. Who are these guys, like, on the team that are going to be able to step up if we need them to? They don't need to see that from Brock Bowers. They know Brock Bowers is going to be there and be able to step up and be maybe the engine of that offense, if not one of the top two engines of that offense. Sure. They want to see what Mayer can do, and maybe another team will like what they see and they'll be able to get something for him. Who knows? But regardless, yeah, I think that's one. When a player is of that level, I don't think you should be overreacting to any sort of usage in the preseason. He's a superstar and we already know it.
Let's get to the next rookie running back here. Chargers, Amarian Hampton. Anything to say on him from this past weekend?
Yeah, I mean, we could probably go through a couple of these guys quick here. Sure. You know, Hampton didn't get a ton of work in this one, but he had one carry where he was like shedding tacklers. Guys were falling off him. He's getting extra yards. That's what you want to see. And I think that's what Harbaugh and Roman want to see as well, right? They want a running back that can do that. This is such an upgrade based on what they had last year with Dobbins. And like, Gus Edwards was out there last year trying to get it done in this offense. Now they have a first round talent in Hampton who can do this kind of stuff. So it was just exciting to see that. Again, not a huge, you know, yardage total or anything like that. Didn't get a ton of touches, but still, when he did get them, he was making an impact. So that's very important. The other guy, I mean, the star of the preseason, let's say, Travion Henderson. I think he's probably going to be the picture on this show. You know, we had a clip that got posted last week when we talked about him. And I always find it funny when you talk about a player who's kind of on the rise like this, especially a rookie, especially in the summer. And you get people responding to it. And some people are responding to it saying, like, yeah, obviously, we already know that guy's great. Why are you talking about him? It's a waste of time, right? And then you get people like, you know, mad that you're going to push his ADP up, that they don't want you talking about him because they're not going to be able to get him at the same price that they've been getting him at in their mock drafts. Like, all of that is so funny to me. I love those comments. Keep them coming. I laugh when I see them. And we're not going to stop talking about guys that are on the rise, even if they are obvious right. players, because we're trying to throw that blanket over all of this, right? And there's some people that know ball and are hardcore fantasy players. And there's some people like some of my friends that just show up this time of year and they're trying to play catch up on who's on what team and what's going on. And we got to do stuff for them as well. We got to make sure they know about somebody like Travion Henderson, who has just been crushing it, right? And we don't have to spend a ton of time because we've already talked about him on the show, but he continues to look great. 8 touches for 50 scrimmage yards and a touchdown through 2 preseason games. It just gives you like that glimpse of what he's capable of. And Ramondre Stevenson is still going to be involved. I said this when we did the running back show the other day. When Jahmyr Gibbs had his rookie season, David Montgomery was still involved, and Jahmyr Gibbs on a per game basis was the RB11 in half PPR fantasy points per game. So we could see a very big season from Henderson, even if Stevenson is still getting a lot of work in that offense. I'm willing to take him in the 4th round. That's a smash pick in the 4th round, even though we were getting him in the 5th and maybe even the 6th earlier this summer. Take him in the 4th. The 3rd, I've seen him going in some leagues. That might be a little bit rich for me. He might pay that off, but I don't think you need to go that high with it. If someone wants to take him in the 3rd, I'm going to let them do it, and I'm going to find somebody else, maybe somebody else, one of these other rookie running backs that are out there. Like, you know, RJ Harvey on the Broncos is a great example. I'm going to talk about him in the Broncos in a second because I want to say more about that whole Broncos team, which just looks incredible right now. But another rookie that we should mention before I get to Harvey is Caleb Johnson on the Steelers. And I've said my piece about the Steelers in the past. I don't necessarily want to get too involved in that offense this year. But the people that are worried about the fact that Jaylen Warren sat out this game and that makes it clear that he's the starter. And Caleb Johnson actually didn't even start this game. It was Kenneth Gainwell that started this game. And then Johnson got out there. Again, this is preseason. I think that's what this coaching staff is all about. They're going to make him earn this. They've already talked him up as a guy that could take a ton of touches, that could be that early down guy, that could be that Najee Harris replacement. I think that's eventually how this works out. So maybe first week, second week, we see Jaylen Warren get a little more work than usual. Maybe his stats are a little inflated at that point. But eventually, after a few games or, you know, after the first month, we're going to see this balance back out and be what we've seen in years past, which is Caleb Johnson being that Najee kind of early down guy, being the touchdown scorer. And Jaylen Warren doing what he normally does in the passing game, making some explosive plays. But really, both guys getting capped by each other, unfortunately. Unless there's an injury, I don't know that either of these guys is going to have a big fantasy season. I think they're both just going to be in that low-end RB2, high-end RB3 range, which isn't that exciting. But if you need an RB2, that's fine to get where they're going in drafts.
Yeah, I do think the Kenneth Gainwell thing deserves to be talked about, right? Because Gainwell has been a guy that, man, that Eagles coaching staff and like multiple coaching staffs like loved the guy, right? They always kind of trying to talk him up, find ways to get him on the field. He was never, you know, like a hyper productive player, but like kind of a useful snap eater type player. I could see Arthur Smith, you know, really liking Kenneth Gainwell, you know, like a smart player, useful guy, right? So I think if this team that we already have sort of ecosystem concerns over, you know, how many touchdowns are they going to score? How good is this offense going to be? We're already sort of prepared to split the backfield two ways between Caleb Johnson and Jaylen Warren. And I think I'm kind of with your analysis there that we're splitting in ways that make sense, where Caleb Johnson's the early down banger. But he, you know, Jaylen Warren's going to mix in on some early downs, but also be like a pass catching type guy. That makes sense. I think we can still get by with those guys being decent picks at their current ADP, not like guys I'm smashing or anything, but just decent picks, their ADP. I do think if we get a third back mixed in here, then we're kind of talking about, this is a pretty tight situation.
I don't know that it would be like a 3-man committee, though. Like, I could see Gainwell getting a couple touches a game, you know, a few snaps a game. I don't think he's going to, like, it's more to me like a Cordarrelle Patterson situation, and not like Cordarrelle Patterson with the Falcons. Cordarrelle Patterson, what he was doing with the Steelers.
That was pretty annoying.
He
gets
thrown out there the odd time, but he wasn't really a factor, right? It was more just like, hey, we signed you. We want you to be involved. You know, here's a touch or two a game, which again, like you said, isn't great when we're trying to get as much as we can for these other two guys. But still, mm-hmm. I can't imagine, even with Arthur Smith, a scenario where they're going to take away from those two guys and give Gainwell that much of the backfield.
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely think this team is just weird. You know, all the tight ends, the DK Metcalf, the Aaron Rodgers. It's just a weird team that if there's any, and like maybe I'm a total fish and I'm overreacting to the Gainwell stuff, but it just gives me like another reason to maybe shy away from the Pittsburgh Steelers, which maybe I'm looking for reasons to shy away from the Pittsburgh Steelers. Just update. We don't have to go long on Travion Henderson because we did talk about him, but his ADP right now is still 73.6 overall in Yahoo leagues. And I'm glad you brought that up about some people are just tuning back into football. Okay. Some people have not, you know, been consuming football. Like I love that you highlighted the comments to, you know, when we talked about Henderson. You know, I made a joke post about him this weekend, you know, where every fantasy analyst is going to be hyping him up, and somebody replied, yeah, the time to buy was 2 weeks ago. I was like, well, unfortunately most people aren't going to even have their drafts until another 2 weeks from now. So yeah, we're still going to be talking about Travion Henderson in normal redraft settings. So yeah, that's pretty spicy third round, but I still think he could definitely, there's some backs with tenuous upside floor projections ahead of him. So we continue to get good buzz on him. He will be a guy that rises, but I really want to know what you think about this Broncos offense, Boone, because RJ Harvey is certainly a guy right now, higher ADP than Travion Henderson. I wonder if that flips at some point. And I've not quite been able to suss out how I feel about the skill position players in this offense, even though I like the unit overall. So let it rip here on the Denver Broncos offense.
Well, I want you to definitely chime in on the receivers, especially one rookie receiver that they have that I'm pretty high on, and I hope you like him as well. In the drafts I've done recently, I definitely think Henderson goes ahead of Harvey in every single draft in the last like couple weeks. So I think that ADP is definitely going to switch very soon. For me, like, Harvey is doing a little bit of what we're seeing Henderson do, but he doesn't seem to be getting like as much hype for it, right? Like, you look at this preseason, 10 carries, 43 yards and a touchdown through these two preseason games, has a couple of catches as well. Don't know that he has the same receiving upside that Henderson has, but I just mean as a fantasy asset, a guy that could really come on this year in a better offense, in my opinion, than what Henderson's in. And, you know, we saw this week that Harvey can get it done between the tackles too. I think that, you know, there's some concern that, you know, is he ready and do they have to kind of get him up to speed and pass pro and stuff? Is that why they brought J.K. Dobbins in? And I think there's some truth to all of that. But still, like, Harvey this week showed he can find that little crease and he snuck through it and he scored on a nice little touchdown run. Him and J.K. Dobbins are going to be a great tandem together. And I think we've seen in the last few years, especially, teams going to these sort of two-man backfields where both guys can have fantasy value if the offense is good enough. And I think this offense is going to be good enough. I mean, we look at this team as a whole, right? And I think people need to get on the Broncos as like a potential Super Bowl contender if they aren't already, because the defense is strong. The offensive line, we would say, is one of the best in the league, I think. We saw Bo Nix handle his business last year, and he's got Sean Payton there calling the shots, which is definitely going to help him. Cortland Sutton, top target on the team. They love him. They reward him with that contract. Now you have the backfield of Harvey and Dobbins, where last year, nothing even close to that. They didn't get anything from the running backs. They wanted to. They were cycling through all those guys, and no one was willing to step up. Now I think you have two competent backs there. So if you have an injury, you're kind of insulated against that too, where one guy could hold the fort down until the other guy comes back. We got to see Evan Engram out there this week, which I think some people were surprised by because a lot of the starters were sitting. He goes out there, one catch for 58 yards. And the way Sean Payton talks about him, that he's definitely a joker, when he got asked, you know, who's the joker on the team. And when Ingram's name came up, he was like, yeah, he's the joker. When other guys' names came up, like Harvey, he was like, well, maybe he could be, like, didn't seem like he was ready to give that title enough to him yet. So love to see that. And then some of the younger wideouts this week, we really see them. We've heard it from the camp buzz and the practice buzz, and we saw it on the field this week. We saw Pat Bryant light it up, and that's the guy I was talking about, the rookie who I think could really factor into this offense this year. Four catches for 70 yards this week for him. Troy Franklin, just a huge week two of the preseason. Four catches, 67 yards, two touchdowns, and he's getting a ton of praise from Peyton. And no offense to Marvin Mims. I don't know if you're a Marvin Mims guy, but I think he's probably best used in that like smaller role that they've used him in the past. I know he came out, I think it was last week in the preseason, and got a bunch of work and people got a little bit excited about that. I don't know that he's going to settle into like a high volume role ever. I think he's probably better used in, I don't want to say a gadget role, but like sort of more of a part-time player on the offense. They can take those shot plays with them.
You can say gadget role.
Things for them.
You can say right, gadget role enough. With Marvin Mims. It's,
I feel
it's
like
totally
that's
fair.
Like demeaning to say gadget role to it for a guy, but like, yes, that's how I think they can use
him. I'm going to back you up there though, that like, that is the best utilization for Marvin Mims. Like, it's some guys, like you think, okay, you know, I always come back to Tyreek Hill's rookie year when he was kind of used in like a gadgety type way, but you actually watched him run like real routes. It's like, okay, well, that there's more to be asked of him. Whereas a guy with like Marvin Mims last year, 44% success rate versus man coverage and reception perception. That's a first percentile mark. Like, he's still not a route runner. He's still not like a true wide receiver. And I always think we get into this sort of discussion with players. Well, is, I think you actually have to watch them to know, are they capable of more? Like, yeah, he's super efficient in that role, but there's just not a lot of evidence that he can do more than that. So I'm with you that, like, because of that, I am interested in Troy Franklin and Pat Bryant and these guys, because I just think Mims, like, why? He was awesome in that role. Like, keep him there, because that was a big reason that the offense was so fun and efficient and getting you so excited here towards the end of last season.
Totally agree. And I also don't want to throw any shade at Devon Bailey, who had a pretty good season last year. And there was a little bit of talk of him in practices this offseason. But I just think what you could potentially get from Bryant, what you could potentially get from Franklin, I think they're just going to be better players in this offense than Bailey's good. But if Bailey's one of your starters, you're not really a contender, I don't think. You need to have better players than that out there. So I think they might have found them. I think they might have these guys that can step up. And then when you're talking about for fantasy, like the prices you can get a lot of these guys at, they're not crazy by any means, right? Like in drafts, Harvey, Nix, Dobbins, Ingram, and then of course, like Pat Bryant's basically free. I'm taking shots on all those guys. Cortland Sutton, I'm a little bit like, but it's not even a shot at Cortland Sutton. I'm a little bit lower in the ranks on him, but it's just because I think there's a lot of good receivers in that range, which you and I have talked about so much, that we're kind of just like splitting hairs, and he's a few spots lower probably in my rankings than he is in some other people's or in ADP, but it's just because I like other guys just that much, just a little bit more than him. But overall, this team is fantastic. They're going to have a ton of success, and this is an offense that I want to invest in, and I don't think is getting enough hype, but I think they're going to have some serious fantasy starters coming out of this offense, some guys that are going to have a lot of success this year.
Yeah, I agree. I just haven't quite been able to find out exactly like where to squeeze the juice, but I do believe there's juice in this offense. Like, I think it's going to be really good. Maybe the answer is just Bo Nix, because all these guys continue to just be useful little role players. But, and I think there is use to them. And like, we'll, when we actually get to week one, we can break down their roles and usage, which bothers me a little bit, Boone, because I haven't been drafting Bo Nix just because he goes so high. And I don't think he really, really stands out in the tier of quarterbacks that he's in, but I'm open to being wrong about that. I love your enthusiasm about the Broncos offense. They're one that I can't wait to see when they get, when we get to week one, because it is, it's just, it's a really interesting collection of role players. And Sean Payton is a guy that it is, he's proven to be able to maximize these interesting role player types. So we've gotten a lot of good stuff from the Broncos. Hope we continue to get some good stuff from them throughout the course of the regular season. We are going to throw to another quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk through an offense that really lit the world on fire in week two of the preseason, and I'm trying not to get too excited about. We will break that down on the other side of this break right after this. All right, we are back. As promised, we're going to talk through an offense that looked pretty damn good in week two of the preseason here, Boone. Let's talk about the Seattle Seahawks, where, man, their run game, I joked about this on Friday night. If preseason is any indication, the Seahawks are going to have the best run game in the league. Now, for context, we did not see the main running backs. Obviously, Kenneth Walker, we'll talk about him. He's been dealing with a little bit of injury, but the backups look fantastic. First-round pick Gray Zabel, their guard there that they took, was putting on a show. So how excited are you about what you saw from the Seattle Seahawks run game in the preseason?
Man, it was like a clinic here this week, right? Like, just so incredible to watch. And normally, I was hoping you were going to be the guy that was going to like bring me back down to earth, because I'm not normally the one that gets like too excited about this stuff in the preseason. And yet, how could you not? Like, every running back that got out there, the offensive line was just absolutely crushing it. They were playing like this physical style. They were using misdirection. Like, they were opening up huge holes. And of course, like, Zach Charbonnet, we know Zach Charbonnet is a good running back. Zach Charbonnet could be a starter on most teams in the league. It's just unfortunate that he's kind of trapped behind Kenneth Walker. But Walker not in this game. Charbonnet's out there. He's lighting it up. Then we see Greg Helani get out there and do it. Then we see Damian Martinez, the rookie, get out there and do it. Like, this is really something. And the concern was like, okay, well, what if Kenneth Walker's not healthy because he's been dealing with this foot injury? He hasn't been at practice a bunch in the summer. Well, he was back at practice today. He was a full go. They're saying that that's what's expected now. This was the plan that they ran. If he can stay out there and he's now going to be healthy and they're going to get him out there this week, and man, like, he is going to have a huge season. Now, the one thing I will say that I've come around a little bit on is something that you said when we were talking running backs recently, that you thought that there was a chance that Charbonnet could maybe work in a little more this year than he has in the past. Because normally in the past, when Kenneth Walker's healthy, he gets the bulk of the work. And Charbonnet is like not really a guy that you could play as a flex. He's just that guy that's sitting on your bench waiting for that Kenneth Walker injury. And then when it happens, he explodes. I wonder, though, if you have a running game that's this successful and you have Sam Darnold at quarterback, and I have some serious concerns about Sam Darnold, even though if the running game is this good, if the offensive line is this good, maybe Sam Darnold will be okay in this offense because he's going to have all the pressure off him and he's not going to, you know, have to do it all himself. But I wonder if Charbonnet now will get used a little bit more because of how good he looks, but also because if this running game is this successful, they're just going to keep running it down people's throats. Like, why would they not, right?
48 carries in this preseason game against the Kansas City Chiefs for 268 yards, 5.6 yards per carry, to 21 passes from the quarterback position. So, yeah, I don't think every game is going to look like that for Seattle, but that's what they want to do. Like, this has been a consistent signal from this coaching staff and this front office. And the reason they go out and they hire Clint Kubiak is we are not going to have a Garbo run game like we did last year. We're not going to have this disjointed, we can't marry our run and pass game. Like, that's what the Kubiak, you know, Shanahan, McVay guys are all so good at. And when these offenses really truly peak, especially the Shanahan kind of offshoot, is when the run game can be married to the pass game, and then you just start smoking people in the play action pass game. Again, when that stuff is all married together, that was why Bobby Slowick in Houston, you know, the pass game looked pretty good because they were just kind of running the Shanahan greatest hits, but they never quite married the run and the pass together. Their run game always stunk. It was never an efficient group there in Houston. If they can pull this off in Seattle, look, it's one preseason game. Obviously, we know that. We are aware of the context of it being a freaking preseason game. You don't have to remind us of that. But if they can do that, yeah, I think there's a pretty – like, I think this offense has a chance to be good, not be bad, you know. And because I actually kind of like the supporting cast a little bit here too. I think there are some useful role players in the passing game, and the two backs are good, man. Yeah, Kenneth Walker – also, by the way, to the Zach Charbonnet stuff, if we're talking about Kenneth Walker as this guy who – he always misses time, we have to manage him in the offseason, why the hell would they want to do what they've always, like, the previous staff has done with Walker, which is like, yeah, when he's up there, let's load him up and just forget Zach Charbonnet. Zach Charbonnet is a good back. It would probably behoove them to not just pile on a bunch of touches to Kenneth Walker. So as long as Walker's healthy, Boone, I don't know where you have him ranked, but I think he's a top 15 back that I'm comfortable taking in the late third round. I think he's a smash in the fourth round if he gets there. But still, if I don't get Walker on my teams, Charbonnet is a guy that I want to come away with in that sort of the later round portion of the running back position, because he has great contingent value and I think he can be a useful flex.
Totally agree. I'm taking Walker in that range. I've loved Walker in that area drafts. You can get him as your RB1. Like, if you want to load up elsewhere and get him as your RB1, I know that seems scary, but you could also take Charbonnet. Like, if this running game looks this good, why not just lock it down with those two guys? You look at, I mean, this week, right? 5 times for 45 yards and a touchdown for Charbonnet. And it wasn't just, it was also like these big runs that they were getting. And again, not just Charbonnet. Like, we saw Helani had a 30-yarder. We saw Martinez had a 19-yarder. Like, if this run game is going to gash defenses like that, then let's just spend those picks, whether it's, you know, late third, or you can get them in the fourth normally with Walker, and then Charbonnet in like the ninth, sometimes the 10th, and just lock it down and just know you're not going to have to worry about it. I've said the same thing to a lesser degree with James Conner and Trey Benson, and I don't even think the ceiling for those guys is quite as high. You can get them a little bit cheaper, but still, it's the same kind of thing where there's certain running games where they've been successful, and if you want to just make sure you get that backup and lock it down, why not? I think it's really smart. Now, the other thing to consider, and I haven't thought this through entirely, I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, is if they are this strong at running the ball, does that take some volume away from the passing game? And then how many guys in the passing game are actually going to come through? I think JSN's going to be fine. I have some concerns, though, that will there be anyone else in that passing game that can step up this year? I think Cooper Kupp is on fumes. I don't think we're going to get that much. Maybe he'll start off the season okay, like last year, and then just sort of fall off. I don't really know that we're going to see that many people in this passing attack blow up. And we should say, too, Torrey Horton, the rookie who has looked really good, he got banged up in this game. He left early, walked off with trainers. It's an ankle injury. But Mike McDonald said today that they don't expect that to be a serious injury and they're not too worried about it. So hopefully he can get out there. That's somebody maybe more for Dynasty. I don't know if he's going to be able to put up big numbers this season. But yeah, JSN is fine to me. Other than that, I don't really know if there's anybody in that receiving core. Like Elijah Arroyo goes really late, but you probably don't even have to take him in regular redraft leagues. He's probably somebody that's going to be on the waiver wire, and we'll see what he does early in the season. So yeah, other than JSN and the backs there, I think that's probably the only way I'm attacking this offense for fantasy, but I think those guys are probably going to be very, very good.
Yeah, I think to the point about the passing game, number one, I also loved the pass game design we saw in this, and I've talked about this a lot over the course of the offseason. You know, some of the worrying about a Jackson Smith and Jigba primary slot receiver, Cooper Kupp, I think needs to be a slot only guy at this point. How can those two guys work together? Well, you just throw the condensed formations at it over and over again. Max Toscano had a really good tweet about this. Again, if you have too many slot receivers, you no longer have that problem with one simple trick, just condensed formations. We're showing it on the screen right now. If you're watching it on YouTube, you can see JSN and Cooper Kupp like just right next to each other. That's how you still give these guys free releases, which I think is good for JSN. And look, like to me, Boone, I think a lot of the concern about the passing volume for JSN has already been baked into his ADP. Like we flashed the projections up earlier, 124 targets, 84 catches. To me, I think that's like I think that's pretty close to the floor. I'd be shocked if he comes in any lower than that. And if this offense is so efficient running the ball, that efficiency will bleed into the pass game. And I just think that there's only one place that's going, which to me is the young, ascending third-year receiver who has shown himself to be a high, high-tier separator and a guy that, man, they're going to really weaponize on a lot of these breaking routes in the intermediate area. So this offense, like when it hits, it is a floor raiser. It's a floor raiser for the offensive line. We saw this in New Orleans last year with Kubiak. It's a floor raiser for the run game. We saw that as well. And it just bleeds efficiency into the passing game as long as everybody is healthy here. So that is the key. We do need the health of these players to cooperate, of course, obviously. But otherwise, I don't think the Seahawks could be kind of like a this year's Buccaneers value offense type thing, Boone, but I do think that some of these guys could have higher ceilings than their current ADP implies, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and one more thing to add, and you know I always got to do it. You look at the schedule for them fantasy-wise this year, and it looks really good across the board. I mean, the 8th best quarterback schedule, the 7th best running back schedule, the 6th best receiver schedule, and the 4th best tight end schedule. So it's going to be wind-assisted whatever they do this year. They're going to have a pretty easy run at it.
No doubt about that. That is a good way to get it started there. Very interested to see how that 49ers defense comes together with Robert Saleh back in the mix here. All right, we are going to throw to another quick break. When we come back, going to have to get a little bit negative about an offense that didn't look so good in week 2 of the preseason, but has some pretty expensive fantasy players attached to it. That is going to come up right after this quick break. All right, we are back. Like we talked about before the break, one offense that certainly did not leave as positive an impression as the Seattle Seahawks was the New York Jets. Boone, I thought the passing offense was really brutal in this week 2 game against the New York Giants. Justin Fields so far in the preseason has dropped back 12 times. He has completed just 4 of 9 for 46 yards. I don't know, man. Counting stats in the preseason are not as dumb as counting stats from training camp, which are super dumb, but it's not great when we're still like, yeah, don't worry about it. It'll be fine with the regular season. Like I said, I know we've had examples of usually younger quarterbacks, right? Like Cam Newton's rookie season, terrible in the preseason, gets out there immediately, drops a 400 spot in week 1. CJ Stroud was the same way, terrible in the preseason. He definitely was good in his rookie season. So I'm not, but again, those guys are usually rookies. It's a little bit different. And again, Aaron Glenn was with me on this one. Aaron Glenn said, quote, overall, in general, we weren't good enough. I don't care if it was a starting offense. I don't care if it was a second team offense, the third team offense. Yeah, I just think the product so far for the Jets has not been great in the preseason. The training camp reports are not very good either. So Boone, like, we can't just ignore the Jets because Garrett Wilson goes in the third round. Breece Hall goes very high as well. What is your level of concern about what we've seen from the Jets so far?
I mean, you wanted some sort of positive momentum, right? You wanted something that could show you that maybe Fields could end up being that long-term starter there. And I think what we're getting is like more of the same, which is just like Fields is going to be the starter this year, in part because they don't really have that other option. Tyrod Taylor's out. I think he just had a surgery, so he's not going to be back until at least the season. Yeah. He might miss some time early in the season. So I don't think they're turning the keys over to him. So it's going to be Fields. But also, like, fantasy wise, to bring it back to, you know, the main thing that we're talking about here, we also knew that, like, we weren't drafting Fields for the passing stats. Like, the passing stats weren't necessarily going to be great. He could still come through, though, because even in those other stops where teams have kind of just given up on him and moved him along, he still put up top 12 fantasy numbers on a per game basis whenever he was starting the seasons in Chicago or the start of last year when he had those starts for the Steelers. So he could still put up good numbers. You might not want to watch the games. It might be pretty ugly to see, but with the rushing production, he can still get you there. The question, like you said, is what does this mean for Garrett Wilson? What does this mean for the running backs there? And yeah, it's not ideal. Like, Garrett Wilson's in a range where there's a lot of guys that kind of have some questions about them, like Tyreek Hill and Davante Adams, who we talked about. And so it's kind of hard to like push him down too far. But again, I think what this does is it caps that ceiling. Like, anyone that thought Garrett Wilson was going to lead the league in targets and put up like a massive total, I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think he might be what we've seen him do, which is kind of overcoming not great quarterback play. But even still, I think it'll be better than a lot of the quarterbacks that he's played with, like Zach Wilson and stuff. And he put up 1,000 yards in a lot of those seasons. So he'll still be okay for fantasy, but I don't think this is going to unlock his ceiling, unfortunately, even though he's a player that talent-wise has a high ceiling that, unfortunately, the Jets aren't just helping him get there. The backfield, that is the one where what is going on here? Like, Breece Hall is, you know, this week it was a two-man committee because Isaiah Davis was hurt and he was out and he's dealing with an ankle injury. So it's the two of them, and Breece Hall was the lead back, and Braylon Allen was out there working with him, and Braylon Allen was the more effective back between the two. Braylon Allen's the one that's been getting all the camp buzz. You have guys like Albert Breer tweeting that everything they're hearing from their sources is that Braylon Allen is in store for a monster year this year, and that what we're seeing in the preseason in terms of his efficiency is showing that he could potentially do that. And then you'll wonder, and maybe we're doing this too much, but you wonder, some of these guys that had the rumors off season that they could be on the trade block, Breece Hall is one of them. And your question is, this a scenario where they really like what their young 21-year-old, you know, 6'1", I think he's 235 pounds, this like tank of a running back that is just maybe coming into his own, that has like a little Derrick Henry to his game potentially. Maybe they just want to hand the keys over to him, especially if they like Isaiah Davis that much. So you'll wonder, does Breece Hall get moved? Maybe not even before the season, maybe during the season, once, you know, things aren't going great, they move him before the trade deadline. I think there's a lot of ways that this backfield could go, but Braylon Allen to me is one of the spots that I am more than happy to grab him, where he's going in drafts with the potential to give you flex numbers as part of a committee, or to maybe at some point take this over in one of several ways that that could happen. He's a guy that if I'm going like hero RB or zero RB, I just did a draft yesterday where I didn't really plan to do either of those, and I ended up going running backs very late. Braylon Allen was like a must draft at that point because he is one of those guys that could turn in to a starter potentially this year, or at worst, give me some flex production until I can find somebody else to be a starter for me.
Yeah, Braylon Allen and like Zach Charbonnet, who we talked about before the break, those are guys that are just awesome targets on those type of team builds. And again, I'm not like going into my drafts thinking I'm going to do that, but you know, at the Kings Classic, where it is a full point PPR, you're starting three wide receivers, three flexes. I did lean maybe a little bit more into the hero RB stuff, and Zach Charbonnet was one of the guys that I came away with in the salary cap draft, and wasn't able to secure Braylon Allen. But again, those are the type of players that there's a lot of upward mobility from where their ADP is right now. If just the usage that fantasy Twitter's like penciling in for the top backs does not come together. And we're certainly, I think we're getting way more evidence in New York that it's going to happen than we're getting in Seattle, that Zach Charbonnet is going to take off of some of Kenneth Walker's workload. But yeah, bottom line, man, on this Jets team right now, they are one of the five worst teams in terms of projected points, according to Vegas, right? Like overall point totals per game. And yet, we still got like two guys going in the third round of fantasy football drafts. Like Garrett Wilson, 38 overall right now. In drafts in the last 7 days, it's 37th overall. It's actually a little bit up, which is just like, I don't know, man. Look, I love Garrett Wilson. I think he is one of the most talented receivers in the league. He is one of the best pure separators in the league. I think he's awesome. And typically, if I'm taking wide receivers in that rounds 3 to 4 range, which I'm not really, but if I am, I would like to tether it to somebody that I think is younger and kind of on the upswing of their career, you know, which has been the JSNs. It's been the Marvin Harrison Juniors. I also think Mike Evans just probably should be going a little bit higher than that. Just still a very, very good player. But the other guy would be Garrett Wilson. But man, like, the Jets are just giving me an awful lot of reasons to want to avoid a team that might be one of the five worst offenses in the NFL, Boone. And I mean, it just like prove it otherwise. And they're just not doing it at this point.
Yeah, I mean, one of the simplest ways to play fantasy is draft good players on good teams. And though we think Garrett Wilson is a good player, it's not looking like this is going to be a good team, on top of the fact that, like I said earlier, I think it's going to be a tough watch some weeks. So if you don't want to have to get stuck watching those Jets games, maybe just grab somebody else in that range, because there's a bunch of different receivers in those areas that I think you could go with. And I also am somebody that really likes Garrett Wilson. He was a keeper on that team that I just mentioned where I drafted Braylon Allen. And the funniest part, to bring this all together, I also ended up with Zach Charbonnet on that team. So this whole section and the one before, it's all coming together just with that team that I drafted last night.
Yeah, and just real quick, last thing on the Fields thing for me, man. The one piece of the analysis for Fields this offseason that I think I have disagreed with in terms of him being a fantasy starter, like, yes, when he's on the field, well, actually, it's kind of two things, to be honest. Number one, it's, oh, he's going to run. Well, the guy does not want to run. He does not want to be a run-first quarterback. He will do it because, like, you're trying to win football games, trying to move the offense, but he does not want to be a run-first quarterback. There's that. Secondly is that he can't get benched. Dude, he continues to do, like, 1 for 5. I mean, he's not going to be that bad in the regular season, but he continues to have these really bad pass performances. They'll put somebody else out there, okay? They're not just going to be like, hey, we paid Justin Fields this money. Aaron Glenn's not that guy, okay? Like, they're going to try to win some football games, and if Tyrod Taylor's healthy by week 5, week 6, week 7, and Justin Fields is just, they can't move the freaking football and the defense is playing a little bit better, they'll pull Fields. They just will. So I just think there's the floor on all of these Jets guys is pretty low. I would love for this to be the year for Garrett Wilson, but I also think like a good result for Garrett Wilson is somewhere between 1,000 and 1,100 yards and 6 touchdowns. Like, that would be a really good result for Garrett Wilson in this offense. And I'm just probably wanting a little bit more for my third round fantasy pick right now, as much as I absolutely love the player. But we talked about the Jets running back rotation, which is a continued storyline. That was another big theme of week 2 in the preseason, is running back battles across the league. We're going to break down more of those running back battles and the information we got from week 2 of the preseason right after another short break. All right, we are back. Running back battles and learning of the information from preseason games. That's really one of the keys we can actually do here. And I think evaluating running back performance, too, is a little bit easier in the preseason than the passing games. But let's get into some of these, Boone, starting in Houston, where we got a little bit of a Joe Mixon and overall Texans running back update this week.
Yeah, so this one wasn't on the field. This was actually one that came out of an article. Aaron Wilson, longtime beat writer for the Texans, he was interviewing the Texans owners, and there was an update that was slid in there about Mixon, because we have not gotten much information on that Mixon injury. But he called the foot injury a complicated medical issue. He confirmed that his week 1 status is in doubt, And we know, like, this whole time, the team just hasn't really wanted to talk about what's going on here. He remains on the non-football injury list. We also had, like, some people in the fantasy world chiming in, like Jeff Mueller from Destination Devi. He's a really good injury analyst. He had a post the other day where he said he's been told by multiple sources where they provided information that just made him take Mixon off his draft board entirely. We had Joe Bryant from Football Guys kind of reiterate. He retweeted that and said basically that he had heard the same thing. So that makes you very scared, like a complicated medical issue. And now you have people in the industry, people who I trust, I love the work that they've done over the years, who are saying they've talked to people that are giving them reason to just not draft Mixon at all this year. That's really, really scary. And not to talk about my fantasy teams too much, that draft I did last night is top of mind, but I needed running backs. And at one point I could have taken Joe Mixon and it would have been at a decent value. And I decided not to. I just passed on him for someone else. I mean, you look at what else they have in that backfield. Like, I think the other layer to consider is when Mixon comes back, they've made an effort. And this is assuming Mixon comes back. We think he's going to come back at some point. They've made an effort to go out and get other guys in that backfield, whether it's Nick Chubb, who got the start this week. Damian Pierce has been there for a little while, had that good rookie season, hasn't done much since, but they've added Woody Marks in the draft, who's, you know, a good pass catching option. They still have Dario Ogunbowale kicking around, who I think is going to be like the final boss for Woody Marks to take over that passing down role. But this is a situation where even if we don't get Mixon in week one or early in the season, I'm not sure who you turn to. Like, I guess Nick Chubb is the guy. You hope he falls into the end zone. I don't think the ceiling is very high for him, though, fantasy-wise. Woody Marks, like I said, is interesting from the passing down work and whatnot that he could get. And Marks actually ran pretty well this week. He had 7 for 40 on the ground, and some people have questions about whether he can get it done on the ground, so it was good to see him do that. But this is just a really, really messy situation. And one where I'm kind of following suit now, where I'm just not taking Mixon anywhere. I don't want to have that headache. I don't want to have to deal with it. And it's one that I think people are probably gonna regret if they end up taking him this year, where he's going in drafts right now.
Yeah, it's just it's the falling knife thing. I say this every time when Mixon is discussed on the show. It's like, yeah, you're gonna, just like you did, you're gonna look at your pool of available players and be like, I mean, God, I'm judging Joe Mixon versus like Javonte Williams or whatever, or, you know, Joe Mixon versus insert random wide receiver here. You're gonna think like, yeah, Mixon, I might be getting the starting back for the Houston Texans, which their offense should be better this year. You know, you're gonna talk yourself into those things, and then you just end up catching the falling knife. You're not actually getting a value, you're just catching the falling knife. So he's an annoying player to rank because I don't really know what to do with him. I think there's a chance he just doesn't play at all this year. I also think there's a chance that, oh yeah, he comes back in week three or something and he's just the starting back. But it just, the range of outcomes is so wide. The floor is way too low for me to really want to take him on any of my teams. So I have no idea how to, this is part of my problem with rankings. Like, I have no idea how to convey any of what I just said in a linear rankings. I don't even think you can do it very well in like tiered rankings either, because at some point he's just going to be the top name on your list and you probably just don't really want to take him. But I actually think the Texans backfield without Mixon in the mix here, I can kind of make sense of it as like Nick Chubb is probably the week one starter and we'll see how it goes with him. I think Damian Pierce probably fits a gap scheme, which I think they'll run more of this year, better than the previous staff's zone scheme. And he would kind of be the direct backup to Nick Chubb. And then, yeah, Woody Marks is a pass catching specialist, a little bit more of an outside zone runner who's competing with Dari Ogunbowale. So like, I think that makes sense to me, Boone. It's just when you introduce the Mixon of it all, I have no idea what to do with it.
Yeah, and I think that's the other note, that when Mixon does come back, is he going to have the kind of workload that he had last year? Because that was part of what made him great for fantasy last year, was he was the guy and no one else did much. Now he's got some other guys that could potentially be involved. Like, does Nick Chubb just completely go to the bench when Mixon returns? I think they probably would still get him some touches, maybe use him around the goal line, you know, and then you have Woody Marks out there as a pass catching back and stuff. So that kind of knocks down the ceiling for Mixon. Then you have the injury. It's just all around a situation that I think people should be avoiding.
A situation that I don't think people should be avoiding, another AFC South backfield that I want to talk about here, Jacksonville Jaguars. We've got some more clues in week two of the preseason. Guess what, gang? usage wasn't just the exact same from week one, because that's not how this stuff works. We're talking about like one drive here, you know. In week one of the preseason, Travis Etienne was out there for all the first team work, essentially. Well, this week, Tank Bigsby, only Jaguars running back to get touches on the first drive against the Saints, touched the ball three times, 25 yards. He offered evidence to the kind of the popular narrative here. Apparently, Tank Bigsby, Boone, we're just getting word of this, does indeed have a pair of human hands. He was able to catch a 19-yard little catch and run there. People think that Tank Bigsby does, like, he doesn't have hands. He can't catch passes with his elbows or whatever. So he apparently, we're getting evidence now that he can catch a little bit of passes here. One catch for 19 yards. But at the same time, we also got some nice runs from Travis Etienne. Basil Tootin scored a touchdown as well. He also looked pretty good. So my analysis on this Jaguars running back situation, Boone, is don't really care how you rank them. Don't really care, you know, if you like this guy, that guy. I don't like the tweet that we're showing up here right now. I actually don't even agree with at all that there is any mirroring to what happened in Tampa Bay. I don't really care about any of that. What I care about is you just take one of these guys in your draft, like take one of them when available, because there is a ceiling here.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think there's value to taking all of them where they're going. And that might mean like you're taking Travis Etienne and he's on another team in week one or at some point this season. But I still think there's value to taking all of them. I will say on the Bigsby, you know, hand situation, it was a catch that like a child could have made, right? It was a very short little, like, just, yes, you know, dump off hands to him. It wasn't,
but he did catch it.
And then he did something with it, which, that might have been the most you know, impressive thing, that he, you know, crossed the field and beat a defender around the edge and like made that 19-yard play out of it. So he can get involved in that way. I still think that Tootin is the guy with the highest ceiling in this backfield. Mm-hmm. That might sound crazy. I know when Bigsby came out in this game and started doing what he was doing early, that people were just like awarding him the job. Well, obviously he's the number one guy. It's over. I'm not so sure about that. I think he's going to be involved, but I think we could definitely still see Basil Tootin start to work his way in there and carve out a bigger role. A very impressive player, very explosive player. If Bigsby is the guy that he needs to overtake, that's almost more exciting to me. Like if it was Etienne, is the guy, like I think Etienne could do some of the things that Tootin can do. Whereas if Bigsby's the number one back and you're seeing the difference between those guys, Tootin to me at some point is going to get a lot of work in that backfield as that explosive option. So yeah, I totally agree with your analysis there. You're taking them all at cost. You're probably going to cash in some value on all of them, no matter how this works out, because I don't know that all three of these guys are going to stay in Jacksonville all season long. And I think this run game, thanks to Liam Cohen and some of the moves they made, I think it's going to be pretty productive.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think this is going to be a productive run game. And unlike the Steelers, where we talked about a three-person backfield on offense, and I'm really not trying to get all that involved in, I'm trying to find avenues. I'm trying to find ways to invest into this Jaguars offense. So if I can just grab one of these guys and hope that maybe Etienne gets traded or there is an injury, like I'm not hoping for an injury, but that's the reality of the situation. More clarity, more opportunity for one of these guys. I do think a Bigsby Tootin tandem makes a lot of sense to me. So Etienne definitely somebody that is at least worth drafting, maybe just on the off chance that he's the Cowboys running back at some point. One player that fantasy Twitter is always trying to invest in and he just won't cooperate is Marshawn Lloyd, Packers running back, who unfortunately has another injury here, Boone.
Yeah, I don't want to spend too much time on this. This one's really sad. Very talented player. Guy that comes out this week and starts making plays and it's looking exciting. Okay, he's finally going to be the guy that we think he could be. And then he gets hurt again. And it's a hamstring injury, another soft tissue thing. It was just a groin recently that caused him to miss time. He cannot stay healthy. We're going to like Kendre Miller levels from the last few years, even though now Kendre Miller's out there and actually making some plays. It looks like he might be the Saints number two. Yeah. I hope that we eventually see that from Lloyd, because it's just been like a cursed couple seasons for him here. And in that backfield, I mean, I think recently they signed Ty Davis Price. You have Emmanuel Wilson there. You have Chris Brooks, who they like. Not really an obvious number two if Lloyd's not the guy. So it makes it tough from a fantasy perspective to really invest in that backfield. But I think all we could say is that we wish Lloyd the best. And let's hope that at some point he can get his career on track here and stay healthy for a long enough stretch to show people what he can do.
Next one that I want to hear your opinion on, because we did talk about him on the running back show here briefly, but another piece of good evidence for Tyrann Tracy, who played 12 of Russell Wilson's 15 snaps in the preseason. I will say, Boone, there's a group of running backs kind of from, you know, near 70, like mid 60s overall to 85th overall in ADP the last 7 days. It kind of starts with Isaiah Pacheco, and then it gets into DeAndre Swift, Aaron Jones, Joe Mixon, who we just talked about, Brian Robinson, and then Tyrann Tracy. It feels like that's the group of running backs that nobody really wants to take, right? Like nobody's like real gassed up to take any one of those guys, but somebody's got to get drafted there, and it's all kind of in backfields where we'll see like how it all plays out or something. I don't know. Tracy's a guy who, you know, is young. He's unlike, you know, an Aaron Jones or unlike a DeAndre Swift, who's, you know, fallen out with a couple of teams lately. I don't know. Are we like not? I don't know. It's the Giants offense. I get it. But are we underselling maybe the appeal of Tyrann Tracy in fantasy?
I think we are. And I made a point to, like, you know, talk about him on that running back episode, because I think he's somebody that even I started to buy that Cam Scadaboo hype and bump Tracy down a bit. And that was a mistake. Like everything we're hearing from the beat writers. And of course, it helps that Scadaboo ended up with the hamstring injury and is missing time right now. But everything that they've said is that this is not a competition, that it's going to be like a 70-30 split. You know, the only question is, in that 30%, is that going to involve goal line work? Because this week we saw, you know, Tracy had a very good week, right? Comes out 7 carries for 39 yards, very productive, kind of like he was last year. From the time he got the starting job last season around week 5, he was the RB21 in fantasy points per game from that point on. But this week gets an opportunity at the goal line, gets stuffed, and then they put Devin Singletary out there and Singletary scores. And you'll wonder when Cam Scadaboo comes back, that bigger bodied guy, is that going to be a role for him where he could take that goal line work away? But even still, I think where Tracy's going, he represents some value. I think the team likes him. And based on what we're hearing, he is the clear lead guy there. So yeah, I think he's somebody that is actually a decent RB2, or where you can get him could even be your flex. And I think he's somebody that people are kind of undervaluing, who actually could put up that low end RB2 kind of season, maybe even more.
I'm going to throw 4 more names at you, and you tell me which one of these you think really matters. Rico Dowdle continues to take third down work away from Chuba Hubbard. Doesn't make me too worried about Hubbard, but I think Rico Dowdle's a guy that, you know, we should definitely consider in the late rounds. DJ Giddens, a rookie, looks like he is the Colts running back too. After Jonathan Taylor, he entered the game after Taylor. He's the healthiest among that group right now. 7th rounder Breshard Smith is still deep down the depth chart in Kansas City. No kidding, he's a 7th rounder. People are getting a little carried away on the Breshard Smith stuff. But is this good news for Isaiah Pacheco, who I just mentioned is in that group of running backs that nobody really wants to take, but somebody's got to score fantasy points? And finally, we've been hammering this, you've been hammering this really, that Will Shipley is the clear backup to Saquon Barkley in Philadelphia over AJ Dillon. So of those 4 storylines, Boone, which one kind of stands out to you as something that maybe people should be taking into consideration?
I mean, because they're mostly about backups, I'll take the one where we can talk about the starter more, and that's the Pacheco situation, right? I think people were worried that with all the backs that they brought in there, having Kareem Hunt from last year, bringing in Elijah Mitchell, drafting Breshard Smith, who has this pass-catching, you know, skill set, that was going to turn into some like really ugly committee, where I'm not sure that's going to be the case. Like, we're 1 year removed from Pacheco being a top 15 fantasy back on a per game basis. Last year, people felt burned, but he was injured. He was not the same player when he came back from that injury. Now it looks like he's healthy. It looks like he is going to be back and scoring a lot of touchdowns and the very clear lead back in that backfield. Somebody else that I'm more than happy to grab as my RB2. And somebody that I've seen going earlier and earlier here in drafts. So it's interesting. Maybe people are catching on to that. But Breshard Smith, still a nice, you know, dynasty piece. I'm not so sure he's going to be a guy that you're going to be able to use in fantasy this year, because even if Pacheco gets hurt again, that's when you're going to have Kareem Hunt and Elijah Mitchell and these other guys step up. And I still think that Breshard Smith would only have like a pass catching role in the backfield. He's not somebody that's going to step in and take over there. So Pacheco on the rise, keep him moving up your draft boards. I think he's a guy you're going to be happy to have as your RB2 this season.
Yeah, Pacheco has been the guy that of that group of, you know, whatever running backs I've had the highest. I think I need to actually put a bigger gap between him and some of the other players, because unlike all right, well, we got to figure out the Jets backfield, or we got to figure out the Giants backfield, we got to figure out the Steelers backfield. This is the damn Kansas City Chiefs. They're going to be like a top five team in projected points. It really matters who their RB1 is, especially if this doesn't turn into some kind of weird committee. So glad you highlighted that one. That probably should move the needle more than any of the others. All right, we're going to take one final break. When we come back, we're talking quarterback battles, some rookies. Did we learn anything that matters in preseason week two? We're going to discuss that right after this. All right, we are back. We've got some quarterback battles, some rookie impressions that we got here. Colts, Giants, Saints. Boone, again, a lot of really cool, fun teams there. Indianapolis Colts, New York Giants, New Orleans Saints. Good Lord. All right. What did you learn from any of these battles? Just give me something that stuck out to you from those three teams.
That, like, neither of these Colts quarterbacks are running away with this job. And in the offseason, when they brought in Daniel Jones, I said, well, someone has to look good here, right? Either you have Anthony Richardson rise to the challenge of having another quarterback there that could take his job away and play better, or he doesn't play better, and they turn to Daniel Jones, who could just give them maybe competent quarterback play. And right now, I don't know if we're going to get that from either guy, unfortunately. I hope still that Anthony Richardson could end up being, you know, that great fantasy player. We know when he's out there, when he's starting, he's somebody you can consider for fantasy. We know that he has the tools to be like an absolute superstar if it could all come together. And yet each day that goes by here, it makes you question if he's ever going to reach that ceiling. And it's not even that I'm worried about Richardson as a fantasy quarterback this year, because there's so many great fantasy quarterbacks, you don't need to turn to him. But it really, really is unfortunate for the receivers in that offense. Guys like Josh Downs, who just recently ended up with a hamstring injury when they were scrimmaging against another team. So hopefully he's going to be okay. But the guys like A.D. Mitchell, who I think is so talented and gets separation all the time and then watches balls just sail past him. Not overly excited about like Michael Pittman and stuff, but even he would be better if they were getting decent quarterback play. Could Ty Warren be like a Brock Bowers type fantasy asset? Not in this offense, he can't. And even Jonathan Taylor could be competing for like the RB1 overall, and instead he's like a low end RB1, or, you know, maybe even ends up being more of like a high end RB2 if this offense really struggles. And they lost players in the offensive line, so that makes it more complicated. It's an unfortunate situation, and, you know, you hope that somebody was going to emerge and play well. And right now we don't even know who's going to win this job, because neither guy's really taking it.
Yeah, no idea. I still think the most likely scenario is that Anthony Richardson starts week one, and if he doesn't play consistently, they'll throw in Daniel Jones to just like try to keep the floor afloat, because I think the rest of this offense is so interesting. The pass catchers are really deep and dynamic. I think the defense is going to be better this year than they were last year. Low bar, but I do think Lou Anarumo is going to introduce a lot more variability to that side of the ball, which makes me excited about that. But they'll want Daniel Jones in to just keep the train on the tracks, which is not good, because this is a really deep wide receiver room. They go four deep. Like, people are hyping up A.D. Mitchell, and I have no idea how he's supposed to like get on the field and get a lot of targets if everybody else is healthy. Obviously Downs is not healthy right now, so that sucks. So it's a really tough situation. I will say I almost feel bad for Anthony Richardson at this point. He uncorked that heater on the deep, like it was like a corner or a go route or something. Great throw, great catch, and people are still giving him crap on Twitter, like, oh, I should have hit the wheel route. That's the answer on that. But it's like, I mean, damn, that was actually a pretty good pass by Richardson, and he still can't win, according to what Nate is now calling the backup quarterback video industrial complex. So, yeah, man, I think, like, let's just see how the Colts thing plays out. I'll talk quickly. I mean, Saints, I don't know if you have any deep thoughts on the Saints. I thought that Tyler Shuck actually, yeah, I thought I was watching a lot of that game because I guess I hate myself. I mean, Tyler Shuck, I think, did lead a couple of nice drives in that game. Olave let a pass go through his hands that he should have hit there. But I will just say, Boone, and you can tell me quickly if you agree with this. I think I've been a little bit more open to, like, I'm allowing myself to be a little more open to the Russell Wilson thing. And Jackson Dart has played, it's just preseason, but he's played pretty well. And like, they've leaned into some RPO stuff, some just really just the deep hitting kind of concepts that he ran at Ole Miss. That makes me a little bit excited to see, you know, to just see what we have in him at some point. So the fact that those guys have looked good, it makes me feel pretty good, a little bit better about the Giants situation than maybe I would have normally.
Yeah, we were talking about the Colts. You were saying like most likely scenario. I think the most likely scenario for the Colts is that Shane Steichen's going to be an offensive coordinator on another team next year. I think that's the most likely scenario, where I think there's a chance that the Giants actually get this thing going, because I think they are going to get better quarterback play. I think Wilson is going to be like a decent bridge quarterback. And what we're seeing from Jackson Dart is it sounds like he's going to end up taking over sooner rather than later. Like, he's looking pretty good in the preseason. Fantasy wise, he can run a little bit too. So that's interesting. Like, in best ball leagues, I've been more than happy to grab Jackson Dart as my third quarterback. You get him so late, and I don't need him early in the season because I'm drafting two other quarterbacks that I'm hoping are going to be healthy at that point. I need him to cover bye weeks. I need him to come on later in the year, and I think that's what we're going to see this year. I think eventually they are going to turn the reins over to him, and I just think overall it's just going to be much better quarterback play. They have some good assets on that team. I think the defense is getting a little better there as well. I'm like weirdly, I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but like weirdly interested in what the Giants are going to do this year.
Yeah. Okay. I said I was open to it. You sounded like enthusiastic, and I can't quite get there, but I do really like Theo Johnson. I'm warming up to Tyron Tracy, and obviously Malik Nabers is Malik Nabers when he's healthy. So I'm trying to just not be completely close my mind to it. I'm trying to be open to it. But then every time I do that, I look at the schedule. I'm like, well, they're going to get completely wrecked all season long because it is a really tough schedule. But that is going to do it for today's show. Boone, I appreciate you, buddy. It's going to be a big week here on the podcast leading up to our big Vegas trip that we have been promoting the hell out of. But before we go, just have to mention this on the show. Today's podcast is the 1,000th episode of the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. I mean, it's been a ride, right? The show started in August of 2018. It has grown quite a bit over the last 7 years. A lot of different names, a lot of different people, both behind and in front of the camera / microphone. At one point, it wasn't even a camera. There was just microphones. So a lot of different people have come in and out. My role has changed throughout it, in addition to hosting the last few years here. So I just want to thank everybody who's been a part of it over the years. Again, both people that have participated, both people that have listened. It's been great working with everybody. It's great to have Boone here now. It's great to have folks like Ray Garvin and, you know, miss everybody that has come and gone. It's just been a great, great cast so far. And while we have 1,000 episodes in the bag, it almost feels like we're just getting started this year, especially. We're so excited for what's in store in Vegas this weekend, what's in store this entire season. Can't wait to just get rocking and rolling. Meanwhile, on Monday, we are going to be back. Faraz Siddiqui of Upper Hand Fantasy, is going to be here to kick off Boom or Bust Week on the pod. We're going to identify 12 breakout players you need to target later in the draft. That's going to be live Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern on our YouTube channel, which you should like and subscribe to, or I will take it personally. Until then, we are out.